Well, we heard for weeks that the new Wyatt clan was on their way to WWE. We had QR codes. We had all kinds of little hints and little clues. We had spooky videos. We had one only a few days ago that said that there was a reckoning coming. They said there was a massacre coming. And a countdown clock that expired tonight as Monday Night Raw was going on the air. They waited until the very end of the show, the closing moments of the show, but they did in fact give us the massacre that they promised. We had a lot of spooky things going on, a lot of Bray Wyatt imagery. We had Uncle Howdy. We had Uncle Howdy's clan. But you know what, though? Taking that aside for a second, there's a man on Monday Night Raw who has not been having a very good week. And his name is Chad Gable. You know, Chad Gable has been trying to win the Intercontinental title now. He has had 5 opportunities to win this championship. And unfortunately for him, he is still without gold. He traveled all the way to Scotland this past weekend, and he lost. He came to Monday Night Raw tonight. He had a match on Raw, and he lost. And as if that isn't bad enough, as if this man has not been losing and losing and losing and losing and losing, he has to do the job even when it's off camera. Look at this man right here, Chad Gable. He even did the job backstage. He looked like he got shot in the head. This is actually quite an appropriate image, I think, for this man's career over these last few months as he has tried unsuccessfully to win the Intercontinental title. Not only is his quest for the championship over based on what they did tonight, they killed him. Chad Gable, look at this man. He looks like he took a stray bullet to the temple. Rest in peace, Chad Gable. Why they gotta do my guy like this, huh? Why they gotta do this guy like this? He just signed a contract. And they've already killed him off. I didn't see any other wrestlers that I could identify. There were a bunch of bodies laying around in the backstage area. He was the only one that I was actually able to identify. Fucking Chad Gable. But Uncle Howdy promised the massacre, and a massacre is what we got. I will tell you, I didn't know how they were going to present it to us on TV. I didn't know if they were going to attack a specific individual. I mean, Chad Gable aside, I didn't know if they were going to attack a specific individual. I didn't know if they were going to, you know, lights were going to go out in the middle of a match. Presentation is very important. If you think back to when Bray Wyatt came back to the company 2 years ago, at the end of that Fight Pit match between Seth Rollins and Matt Riddle, at the end of that show, it was a tremendous presentation, and it got over huge with the crowd. And plus, the crowd was also just very happy to see Bray back in the company after he had been gone for so long. Presentation is key. This is a unique situation, and not one that I think we've ever really been in WWE before, where we had a character, we had a performer in Wyndham Rotunda, who is, you know, again, some people like the Bray Wyatt stuff, some people like the Fiend and the Fun House and all of that stuff, and some people absolutely hated it. But you had this beloved character by so many people who passed away at such a young age, and he was all full of ideas and creativity, and even, you know, Triple H has talked about the fact that he could work against him because Bray just had so many ideas. You know, he couldn't contain it. He didn't know sometimes how to harness it. It could be hard to work with him because of that. A man full of all sorts of weird, wacky ideas. And now you're going to try to bring back some of what he brought to life without him. It's his vision, but he's not around to be a part of it. He's not around to engineer it, you know, and actually perform it and have input into it. And so you have to handle it very delicately because this is his vision. But there is no better person to take over that vision than his own flesh and blood, his own brother, who was going to be part of that storyline previously until Bray got sick and then he got taken off TV. And that, of course, is Bo Dallas, who is portraying Uncle Howdy the first time. course, he's portraying Uncle Howdy this time as well. If anybody would want to make sure that this thing is pulled off in the right way, because you only get one shot at this, it is Bo Dallas. And I can tell you, having watched that segment at the end of Raw tonight, I don't know where this is going to lead. I don't know how this is going to turn out. I don't know if this is going to be a situation where, you know, we get a lot of spooky vignettes, but then when they get in the ring, you know, it's a whole, you know, it's a whole different ball game, and we're back to the days of the Fiend where people would work with the Fiend, and then it would be tough, you know, it would be tough to get over and have a match with that character. I don't know where this is going to go, but what I can tell you is the presentation here was pitch perfect. And I believe, and I'm not somebody who knew him on a personal level, but I watched his documentary, and you know, you hear a lot from Bray when he was alive, and it's just weird how his mind would work. But I can sit here and say that I know that if he were around, he would have fucking loved what we saw at the end of that show tonight. And if Bo Dallas's dream, if his goal was to pull off something that his brother could be proud of, then he doesn't have to worry about that. Because this is the sort of thing that you would expect Bray Wyatt would love. Not only that, this was a lot darker than anything that I think we ever saw Bray Wyatt do on WWE television. Right? We saw a lot of spooky segments and, you know, vignettes and things of that nature. But I don't remember anything being this dark, where you just see bodies piled up. And again, I showed you the picture of Chad Gable where it looked like he was laying there dead. It was very unnerving. And that's what they were going for. And so to that effect, it was a huge home run that they hit with this segment at the end of the show. And then we get the final shot of all the different characters, you know, huddled together on stage. And we have Bo Dallas as Uncle Howdy. You know, we're here blowing out the lantern. It was emotional watching this. At first, when you heard those sound effects and you heard the chimes from the beginning of Shatter, which was Bray's last song, and they never actually played the song all the way through, but the door in the aisleway with the light coming out of it, the lantern, obviously, this is not just an extension of what Bray was doing. This is a continuation of what Bray was doing. Right down to the name of the faction. It is the Wyatt Six, but they're spelling it S-I-C-K-S. They already have merch up on WWEshop.com. We have the Wyatt Six. So we had Uncle Howdy was present. We had, now I don't know if she was supposed to be Abby the Witch, or if she was supposed to be Sister Abigail, but Nikki Cross, to the surprise of no one, because she was one of the names that has long been rumored to be a part of this group. We saw her there. We had what I would presume would be Eric Rowan under the Ramblin' Rabbit mask, and he had the giant mallet that said help on it. What they did was they brought many of these Firefly Funhouse characters to life, and we had a couple of other people under masks that I think were probably Dexter Lumis and possibly Joe Gacy from NXT, who has been rumored to be a part of this group as well. No Alexa Bliss, even though she was part of the Bray stuff for so long, and it doesn't mean that she will not end up being a part of it, but you know, she was not there on the show tonight. And this may not even be all the members. But as a first presentation, not even knowing where this is going, I thought this achieved what it set out to achieve. It was carnage. Because when they promised the massacre, you know, what I was thinking is, okay, we need something where you cut to the back and you just got bodies everywhere. Like, they just savage half the Raw roster. And in a way, that's kind of what they did at the end of the show. The shot of the gorilla position, which looked like a fucking bomb got dropped on it. Everything's all dark in the back. The lights are flickering. You got sparks flying. The camera's following along in the backstage area. I mean, it was shot like something that you would see out of a horror movie. And that's exactly, you know, what this should have been. You know, based on the buildup to it, which has been going on now for so long, you want to stick the landing. The last thing you want to do is do something like this, and then it's like, that's it? After all this buildup, all these weeks and months of QR codes and spooky videos, right? This is it. And I think they knocked it out of the park. So kudos to them for the close, which is going to have a lot of people talking about the end of Raw tonight and where this may or may not be going. I have no idea what this means as far as who they target first, or if they're just going to go around, are they going to show up on SmackDown, right? Who's to say that they're Raw exclusive? Who's to say they don't show up and do something very similar on Friday night on SmackDown? So we'll have to wait and see exactly where this goes, but this is going to have a lot of people talking, and I don't think they could have really nailed it any better than they did. But there were a lot of things going on Raw tonight, including Drew McIntyre, who has quit WWE. He pulled a Bret Hart. Bret Hart once came out on Raw after he got screwed over at the Royal Rumble, and he said, "I quit." And of course, that didn't last very long, and neither will this. See you on Friday in Chicago, Drew. CM Punk is coming to SmackDown on Friday night because SmackDown is in Chicago. Clash at the Castle was in Glasgow. So it's about time Drew McIntyre gets himself a little bit of revenge on Muffin Man or Donut Man. I guess he was chowing down on donuts the other day. But for now, they want you to believe that Drew McIntyre has quit. He has deleted his social media pages, all of his accounts. After what happened at Clash at the Castle, I can't say I blame the guy. After what happened to him there. But this is also an indication for all the people who are very upset. And look, if you are from Scotland, if you were at the show, and you were hoping for that big hometown win on Saturday for Drew McIntyre, I sympathize with you and I can understand why you would be upset. But there were a lot of people saying, oh, Triple H, he fucked up. Oh, you know, creative, they botched the ending of that match. Why would they do this? And why do they hate their fans and all this stuff? The finish made total sense to me. And it didn't bother me. Wouldn't have bothered me if Drew won the title either. But Drew McIntyre was not going into SummerSlam as the World Heavyweight Champion, and now we see why. We get a good sense of where things are going now because they threw us a curveball tonight when it comes to the World Heavyweight Championship. We had the return of Seth Rollins, which is not something that I heard anybody talking about, and it was not something that I was expecting, but there he was. And not only was he in the ring on Raw tonight, but guess what? Seth Rollins is challenging for the World Heavyweight title at Money in the Bank. And there's a pretty good chance that Seth Rollins is going to be the one, not Damian Priest, going to SummerSlam to defend against Gunther. So there is a reason why they did what they did at Clash at the Castle. But you had a lot of people who were very upset and letting their emotions get the better of them, and they couldn't see what the longer-term plan was here, which makes all the sense in the world to me, because now you've got a whole bunch of big matches potentially lined up for the SummerSlam card, and all the pieces now are fitting into place. We also had a series of Money in the Bank qualifying matches on the show tonight. We are going to go through all of it, because we have a lot to unpack here, including more about that ending. This is your Monday Night Raw review. It is Monday, June 17th, 2024. I am the Sala Monster, and thank you very much for choosing me for your Raw coverage tonight. I want to thank everybody for getting us back into the top 10 on Apple Podcasts. We cracked the top 10. We're in pretty good company here on this list. So thank you for everybody who downloaded and listened to episode 866 of the podcast. Climbing the charts, all because of you guys. So I just wanted to give you a very sincere thank you for that. Let's get into this Raw show here, because we got a lot to unpack. And you will see these super chats popping up periodically. I'm just putting a pause on it here for a second, but we'll get back to that. Raw opened with a Clash at the Castle recap from all of the events that went down at the Hydro on Saturday. And we had a shot also of Drew McIntyre walking into the arena, looking rather sullen. But it was not Drew McIntyre who opened the show tonight. It was former World Heavyweight Champion Seth Rollins, who was not advertised for the show. But there he was, a genuine surprise to kick things off here on Monday Night Raw. We have not seen Seth Rollins since WrestleMania 40. And Becky Lynch spilled the beans a couple months ago that he underwent knee surgery to repair a torn meniscus. Normally, for a surgery like that, that's a 6 to 9 month recovery. And so, why was it a surprise? It was a surprise because nobody was expecting Seth Rollins to be back on television, let alone back in the ring, this quickly. Apparently, he has the mutant healing powers of John Cena, because he had surgery 2 months ago, and now he's going to be challenging for the World Heavyweight title in 3 weeks. So I'm not sure how that works. I'm not sure if they said it was one thing and it was really another. I'm not sure if maybe he wasn't as hurt as they originally feared. I don't know, but he was supposed to be out a lot longer. And now they have a big name back on Monday Night Raw. So, of course, if you're WWE and you're Triple H, you're very happy to have Seth Rollins back. It's always good to get one of your big names back early. He was out there decked out in all white. Rollins introduced himself and the crowd started singing his song. And he told the fans he missed them too and he thanked them. Rollins said he was cutting right to the chase. He said that he was back for one reason. Said he got into this business to be the greatest of all time and said that he can't do that without getting back the championship that he made. Of course, he was the first ever World Heavyweight Champion. Rollins looked at the Money in the Bank briefcases. He knows all about that, that were hanging above his head, and said the Money in the Bank is only a few short weeks away. And he teased entering the ladder match before he was interrupted by the World Heavyweight Champion at the moment, Damian Priest, came out to the ring all by himself. And Priest told Rollins that it was genuinely good to have him back. He says, not being sarcastic, I really mean that. It's good to see you. He also said that he meant it respectfully when he says that Seth Rollins is the one that he wanted to cash in on at WrestleMania, not Drew McIntyre. Rollins says he likes where Priest is coming from. He says, you know, the two of us are actually a lot alike. He said that we both come from factions. You, of course, with the Judgment Day, and he with the greatest group of all time, The Shield. Both men cashed in Money in the Bank. Both men won their first world titles at WrestleMania. But the one thing that separates the two of them is that at some point, he grew a set. Said he realized that at some point he needed to stand on his own two feet. And he asked Priest what kind of champion he wants to be. Do you want to be the greatest of all time? Or do you just want to be a footnote in the Judgment Day? And Priest said, all right, well, you got a point. But he reminded Rollins that when Seth won the world title, his very first challenger was him. And Rollins beat him. Said that Seth was better than him back then, but time changes things. Priest said that people thought he would forfeit the title due to what happened to his leg at Clash at the Castle. Yeah, I was very happy to see him on his feet, moving around okay. That was a very scary moment from the show the other day when his foot got caught in the ropes. I mean, that could have gone very wrong. Priest said he resents the fact that people think Seth is better than him today. And then he told Rollins, look, you don't need to worry about entering yourself into the ladder match. He's going to put the World Heavyweight title on the line against him straight up, one-on-one. And Rollins thought that he was joking at first. He goes, this is a setup, right? Where are your boys at, right? They're going to attack me at any moment. And Priest said, no, I'm serious. And with that, Rollins accepted his challenge for Money in the Bank in Toronto. They will go one-on-one. It is now official. Seth Rollins against Damian Priest for the World Heavyweight Championship. Well, that was certainly a curveball that I didn't see coming because I didn't think this guy was going to be back so soon. And by the way, how nice of Damian Priest to offer this man who is coming off knee surgery the chance to forego the very dangerous ladder match and not have to bother with that and just straight up giving him a one-on-one shot for the World Heavyweight Championship. Priest was basically in babyface mode here. Right, he came out, he said, look, I'm being genuinely serious. It's good to see you. It's good to have you back. Right? He's putting him over. Then he's gifting him a World Heavyweight Championship match, even though he lost straight up at WrestleMania. But he's going to give him a World Heavyweight title match. And usually it's the other way around, right? It's not the champion who is chasing after his next challenger. It's the challengers, right, that are coming from every side. They're coming from every angle. They're gunning for the champion. They want a shot at the belt. And this is very different because here it's the champion saying, here, I want you to fight me. I'm going to give you a shot at my title of Money in the Bank. So that's how they went about doing that. So for all you people out there, and I know that there are some people in here right now who I'm sure subscribe to this same theory, that, oh, you know, Damian Priest and Gunther is not a realistic World Heavyweight Championship match at SummerSlam. That's not the world title match. They should have put the belt on Drew. They should have put the belt on this guy or that guy. You're probably going to get your wish, because it sure feels to me like Damian Priest ain't going into SummerSlam as the World Heavyweight Champion. That this is their way to get that belt off of him, maybe with some drama involving Balor and the Judgment Day. And we are probably going to end up with Seth Rollins defending the World Heavyweight Championship against Gunther at SummerSlam. And remember the segment from earlier this year in January? It was, I think, the week before the Royal Rumble. It might have been the final Raw before the Royal Rumble. There was an in-ring confrontation between Gunther and Seth Rollins. The seed was planted way back then for a future match between those two. And if I were a betting man at this moment, even though we're 3 weeks out, I would say that it looks like we're going to get that match on August 3rd at SummerSlam. And that is the bigger match. I mean, Seth Rollins against Gunther, as far as marquee value, as far as big names in the company, that would be the bigger match for them to do. I would have been fine, frankly, with either match. I think Damian Priest shut a lot of people up on Saturday with that performance that he had in there with Drew McIntyre. But now it seems like, okay, I could see now where they're going with this and the match they really wanted to do. And again, it's another reason why they did the finish in the main event the way that they did. But, you know, people were all wrapped up in their feelings and all wrapped up in their emotions. And how could they know that Seth Rollins was going to show up on Monday night? So good for them, by the way. It's hard to pull off a surprise these days. And I didn't see anybody mentioning Rollins by name. Yeah, I saw somebody mention that for that kind of injury, 2 months is not unrealistic. That may well be the case. Just everything that I've read about a torn meniscus back when he first tore it was that if it was serious enough to have surgery, and it sounded like it was, you know, bad enough, he had to go under the knife, that it might be a 4 to 6 month or a 6 to 9 month thing. But if I'm wrong and it's a 2 or 3 month thing, then I guess he's right on target. That's probably the case, because that's a huge discrepancy to go from 2 months to 7 or 8 months. I mean, that's a pretty big gap there. So it's good to have him back. We had footage from earlier in the day of the Raw general manager, Adam Pearce. He was talking on the phone in his office when Chad Gable entered with Otis, Maxxine Dupri, who now is on a crutch. Okay, she had a walking boot last week. Now she had a walking boot and a crutch and Tozawa. Gable blamed his fellow Academy members for his loss to Sami Zayn and asked for a rematch. And Pierce suggested, look, you're going to have to go to the back of the line. And Gable told him, look, find somebody worthy for me to face. And Pierce said, okay, I got somebody in mind. Turned out that opponent was Braun Strowman. So now we got Braun Strowman and we got Chad Gable in the ring. And Michael Cole is sarcastically wishing Gable good luck, as if he has absolutely no chance at all. The fact, again, not only is he being sarcastic and being like, hey, good luck, Chad, right? Then he's going on about how, look at the size difference between these two men. Look how much smaller Gable is than Braun Strowman. This is a man who has been challenging, including Saturday at one of their major events, challenging for the Intercontinental title. He came within a count away from being the Intercontinental champion. And you would think, the way Michael Cole was talking about this guy here, that he was some fucking jabron off the street. I'd be more upset about this if Michael Cole wasn't proven right, because 2 minutes later, this match was over. So apparently Michael Cole was right. And I guess I was wrong, because this guy got squashed like a fucking bug here in this match. We nearly got the Strowman Express on the outside. We didn't get it, so I'm not gonna bust out the Strowman Express here. But he teased it. He tried to go for it. Gable ended up using Tozawa as a human shield, and then instead of barreling over him, Braun, he stopped in his tracks. But then he grabbed Tozawa and he threw him at Chad Gable. He used this man as a projectile and he launched him through the air and he threw him at Chad Gable. which technically this should have been a disqualification. Okay. Braun Strowman used Tozawa as a weapon and he threw him at Chad Gable, right? I have people sometimes tell me that when guys go outside the ring and they use the ring steps and they don't get disqualified, oh, it's a part of the ring. So it's okay. It's legal. It's like throwing your opponent into the turnbuckle, right? And again, even that, I'm like, all right, that's a bit of a stretch, but okay, fine. Tozawa is not part of the ring, but we did not get a disqualification here. Then in the ring, he caught Gable in a tilt-a-whirl into the power slam, and he pinned him 1, 2, 3. Not the only job that Chad Gable would be doing on this show, but this was the first. Yet another loss for Chad Gable. And I know that it was done to get to the angle that we got here in the post-match, but I mean, holy shit, how many losses is this man going to take before you just beat all the credibility out of him completely? How many times? How many times is he going to lose? And lose. And lose. And lose. And lose. See, I tolerated it because I believed that I saw the vision of where this was going. And I said, in the end, this man is going to get that title. And after tonight's show, I no longer believe that to be the case. But before we get to that, let's talk about what happened here. So an angry Chad Gable is in the ring. He calls Otis and Tozawa and Maxine Dupri on her gimpy leg into the ring. He starts berating and pushing around Tozawa when Maxine hobbled on one leg in between them and she gets right up in Chad Gable's face. Gable then grabs the crutch away from her. I thought he was going to hit her in the ankle with it. She had that walking boot on. I was like, I thought for a second there he was going to hit her in the walking boot and she was going to drop. But he took the crutch away. Now she's hopping around. And he throws the crutch on the outside, right? What an asshole this guy is. Then he tells her to get the hell out of the ring. While Otis is helping Maxine out of the ring, in the foreground, we have Gable and Tozawa. And Gable is smacking him. He smacks him down to the mat. Otis has his back turned, but Otis can hear what's going on, and he looks up, and now the crowd is starting to get with it because they realize, okay, here we go, right? It didn't happen on Saturday, but maybe it's going to finally happen here. And Otis flips, he just turns around, and he finally shoves Chad Gable down on his ass. And the crowd popped, and now Gable is on his ass, he's in the corner, cowering, looking up at Otis, who is starting to flip out and hulk up and freak out. We don't know what this man is going to do. It looks like he's about to murder this man. The murder, little did we know, Chad Gable would be murdered. We did get a murder of Chad Gable on this show. It just wasn't in this segment. But we don't know what Otis is about to do. But instead, he calms down. He leaves the ring. And he assists Tozawa and Maxine to the bag. That leaves Chad Gable in the ring all by himself. And he's muttering to himself about how, you know, we're supposed to be a family. We're supposed to be a family. I really wish that they would have done this angle on Saturday because the crowd did pop for it. They were in Corpus Christi tonight, you know, and I joke a lot. I call it Corpses Christi, and We got a lot of that tonight, okay? They were good at points, but then there was a good chunk of the show where they were just very quiet. I feel like if they would have done this anywhere else, but especially in Scotland on Saturday, the place would have exploded, even just for the show. That's really all Otis did. And they saved it for tonight, and I still feel like it would have gotten a better reaction had they done it somewhere else. But we're going to circle back around to Chad Gable because we're not done with this guy yet. I'll come back to him in a second. Pat McAfee did, you know, he does his Telestrator gimmick, right? The same gimmick that Bobby Heenan used to do. He had the brain scan. Jerry Lawler had the Royal Telestrator. So Pat McAfee is doing his Telestrator over footage from last week with Liv Morgan giving Dominic Mysterio her hotel key card. And then all the key card hijinks that follow. The Judgment Day was around the table in the back talking about how evil the card was and, you know, throwing it down on the table in front of them. And it included him pointing out what I pointed out during the review last week, which is that Finn Balor very covertly swiped the key card and off the table and put it in his own pocket. And so McAfee showed us that. Then he just casually called the Judgment Day assholes, which was not censored. Apparently now that's just a common phrase you could throw around on these shows. I mean, he calls Braun Strowman a big son of a bitch when he comes out. He's calling these people assholes. I mean, it's refreshing in a way, and I'd enjoy it more if Pat McAfee wasn't the most annoying fucking person on the planet. So Damian Priest arrives. Now we're live. Damian Priest arrives in the Judgment Day clubhouse, where Finn Balor said that he's got his back for his match against Seth Rollins. Priest said that we could table that, right? Because you could tell, like, he didn't want to come right out and say it, but he's probably going to end up telling Balor, look, I gotta go this one alone. I don't need your help. That was the insinuation. And Balor got a look in his face like, really? He was taken aback by it. So Priest asked Balor about taking the key card last week, and Balor didn't like what he was being accused of. And he said he only took the key card to protect Dom. So Priest said that he didn't mean it that way, and he told him, I've got no doubt that you're the next Mr. Money in the Bank. Priest said that he needed to know where his head was at, and Balor paused and said that he's going to win the briefcase. He just wants him to know, and he's going to cash in to win that title from Cody Rhodes. He said, you can trust me. I'm not going to cash in on you. I'm going to cash in on Cody Rhodes. Of course, Finn Balor ain't going to be cashing in on anybody. We'll get to that later. Now, the entire time that this is happening, Dominic is sitting on the couch behind them, rummaging around his bag, looking for, like, he's digging for gold. He's like, he's looking for something. Obviously, whatever he's looking for is not there. And he said, I can't find my purple cow vest. You know, fuck, I hate when that happens. When I woke up for work the other day, man, and I went in my own closet. I was looking for my purple cow vest, and I couldn't find it. Oh, that's right. I don't have one. And neither should you. But he does, and he couldn't find it. He says, I swear, I thought I put it in my bag, but it's not there. Carlito joked that he probably left it in Liv Morgan's hotel room, and Priest did not find that very funny. After the other three left, Priest asked Balor, hey, have you spoken to Rhea? And Balor said, hell no. We still don't know when we're going to see Rhea Ripley again, but when we do, there's going to be hell to pay. We had Io Sky, we had Zelina Vega, and we had Kiana James in a triple threat qualifier for the Women's Money in the Bank ladder match. We are now having qualifiers because Money in the Bank's only 3 weeks away. We should be getting qualifiers and tournament matches very soon on AEW television for the Owen. You know, the Owen Hart tournaments, the finals are taking place on July 10th, which is, 4 days, I think, after Money in the Bank. So we should be getting those. We're going to be getting a whole bunch of qualifying matches on all of our wrestling shows here in these next few weeks. Io knocked Kiana off the apron and hit her with a springboard moonsault. Vega then hit a Meteora off the apron onto Io, and that took us into the commercial break. There was a Tower of Doom spot coming out of the break. Sky and Vega, they both draped an arm over Kiana, but the referee refused to count. Would not count. And Michael Cole pointed out that the referee declined to count because there could be only one winner, which makes sense. Io went to the ropes, had her legs swept out from under her by Vega with a Tiger Faint kick. Vega hit a code red on Io and had her beat, but Kiana broke up the pin. And then we had the women's world champion, Liv Morgan, comes strolling out to the ring. And what is she wearing? She is wearing Dominic's purple cow vest. And this distracts Zelina Vega, who is on the apron yelling at Liv. This is going to be a women's world title match at Money in the Bank. I mean, it looked that way last week when they were fighting. And that's fine. You know, if Liv should be defending the title on that show, and it's going to be basically a placeholder opponent, whoever you plug in there. So Vega is as good as any. But Kiana ends up knocking Zelina off the apron to the floor, and then Io hit Kiana with a Meteora up against the ropes. Now Kiana is down. Io goes up to the top, hits her over the moonsault, and gets the win. There was no doubt when they announced this match earlier today, and I saw who was involved. Io Sky is going to Money in the Bank. Zelina Vega is going to Money in the Bank. Or Kiana James is going to Money in the Bank. Who do you think was going over in this match? Of course, it was Io Sky. That was the correct outcome. The match itself, nothing terribly special about it. Io is going to be in the Money in the Bank ladder match exactly 1 week before she flies to Japan to wrestle Utami Hayashishida for the Marigold show. So it's going to be a busy week for Io Sky next month. We got a recap of Bron Breakker beating Ilya Dragunov on Raw last week, which apparently some people thought was a burial. He's buried now. I addressed that on the podcast yesterday. The only thing buried is your brain, if you believe that. Ilya Dragunov was not on the show tonight, but he's going to be just fine. And by the way, that match last week was fucking great. So then they recap the angle with Braun killing Ricochet. Poor Ricochet. He ended up getting lawn darted into the truck, and then he got power slammed onto a car windshield, and then he got strapped to a gurney, and they loaded him into an ambulance, and Samantha Irvin went with him to the hospital. Samantha Irvin, by the way, did not work the show tonight. They had Alicia Taylor in her place, but Michael Cole did say that Samantha is going to be back on TV next week. So her not being on the show tonight has nothing to do with Ricochet or his contract status. He's likely leaving. She's not going anywhere. One has nothing to do with the other. We had Sami Zayn, still the Intercontinental Champion, coming to the ring for a promo, but he had to wait because first they went to a commercial break, which meant he had to stand out there for a while. Got to stand out there for a while and wait your turn until it's time for you to actually speak. So then it was time to address all of us, and he said, you know, it's crazy to think that all the stuff that Chad Gable, you know, with him and Gable started over a wrestling match. And now it's over because he beat him in a wrestling match. As far as he's concerned, he is moving on from Chad Gable. So is WWE, apparently. So he said he'd be lying, though, if he said that it's going to be easy to move on from the Alpha Academy because he really feels for those guys. But if there's one thing the Bloodline taught him, it's that everybody has to do things on their own time. But he's convinced, especially after tonight, that Alpha Academy and Otis, when they are ready, they will leave Chad Gable as well. So now he has to look forward, and he has to look towards defending the Intercontinental Championship against anybody and everybody. And that brought out Bron Breakker. And Bron came to the ring and he said, you know, I've left a long list of bodies in his 3 weeks here on Monday Night Raw. Maybe a little longer, but he hasn't been on Raw for very long. But he's left a long list of bodies in his wake. So Sammy is next. Because he is taking that Intercontinental Championship. Sammy got up in his face, held up the title and asked him, is this what you want? But before he could answer the challenge and accept, it's a shameful thing. Lobster Head. Best song right now in WWE. I'm so glad they brought that back. Lobster Head himself comes at it. Sheamus. In his jacket and his hat. Like he just came from the pub. Sheamus comes to the ring. He calls Sammy his fellow Ginger Ninja. Said that he's been chasing that Intercontinental title for a while now, so if he's going to be given out opportunities for it, maybe he should consider him. And Braun interrupted and said, Sheamus, you're going to walk in here and act like I'm not even here? He goes, are you kidding me? Are you out of your mind? He said, people don't care about your sob story or titles that you haven't won. We all know what happens when you get in my way, and right now, Sheamus, you are in my way, and I will kick your ass too. Sheamus said he gets it. He's cocky. He's the new hot kid in WWE. But as far as the IC title goes, said Breakker has absolutely no skin in the game. And he is the new kid. And he emphasized the word kid. He He told Breaker to get to the back of the line before he makes him. And then Sammy is standing, not in between them, but he's in the background now. He's in between them as they're facing off. And Sammy said, boy, it sounds like you two really need to sort all this out. So I'm going to go to the back and I'm going to talk to Adam Pearce because he's pretty sure the people don't want to see the two of them talk it out. They want to see them fight it out right here tonight. And everybody cheered. Now, I was excited at the prospect of getting Sheamus one-on-one with Bron Breakker. But I also watched this and I thought, boy, this is a terrible sign for Chad Gable because they really are moving on. I mean, he lost his match tonight. And then the very next segment, Sami Zayn comes out and flat out says, I'm moving on. And now we have Bron Breakker coming out and we have Sheamus coming out. And you see a whole new program developing here. And reality begins to set in. These fuckers are actually going to move on without ever putting this championship on Chad Gable. Case in point, later in the show, there was another segment in the back. Gable comes into the locker room where the Alpha Academy is, and he is berating them. Now, Otis is putting stuff in his bag. He's packing his gear. And Gable's like, what are you doing? And Otis looks at him and goes, we're done. We. Him, Tozawa, Maxine, says, we're done. And they all walk off, and Gable is screaming as they left, and he says, you're not done until I say you're done. Then he announced that you're all expelled, and he said that he would win Money in the Bank, and he would do what Otis couldn't do and become the world champion. So it appears Chad Gable is not winning the Intercontinental title. This is a story that goes all the way back to last fall, when he couldn't get the job done against Gunther, and his little girl was in the front row, and she was crying her little eyes out. And I thought to myself, man, there's a great story in here. This is a great redemption arc for Chad Gable, fighting his way back into contention for the Intercontinental title and winning it, whether it's the Royal Rumble. Because at the time, the belief was that he was going to be wrestling, Gunther was going to be wrestling Brock Lesnar at WrestleMania. And I thought to myself, well, that doesn't have to be for the Intercontinental title. So he could drop it to Gable before then and then go to WrestleMania and beat Brock. But they never came back around to it. Gable, whenever he was on television, would lose. What else is new? And it was like, wow, so they're really not going to come back to this. They're not going to revisit what I thought was a great story. And then they took it a different way, and we ended up getting heel Chad Gable, and he's been great as the asshole heel that you just want to see get popped in the face. And I thought, okay, This is a great direction too, right? Okay, they didn't go here. I think that would have been great, but okay, we'll go the heel route with him. And he lost, and he continued to lose. And then we had this match coming up here, Clash at the Castle last weekend. And even I was thinking, let's just get to Money in the Bank, right? You can run it back one more time at Money in the Bank, and you have him beat him for the championship in Canada. Oh, the heat that it would get, right? You put the Creeds with him. He lost clean on Saturday, and they're moving on. And now Chad Gable is talking about being in Money in the Bank. First of all, he has to qualify to be in Money in the Bank, and he's going to be in a match next week, another triple threat match, where he's going to attempt to qualify against Braun Strowman and Bronson Reed. My guess is he will qualify. Although I don't know why I'm even saying that based on his fucking track record, but I think he'll get the win next week. Call me crazy. But he's going to win Money in the Bank and do what? Challenge for the World Heavyweight Championship? What, are you fucking kidding me? This guy had 5 matches for the Intercontinental Championship. He got beat every single fucking time. Now we're supposed to believe that he's going to go in there and win Money in the Bank and cash in and become World Heavyweight Champion? If by chance he wins Money in the Bank, he has to qualify first, but if he does, the chances of him winning Money in the Bank are slim to begin with. But even if he wins, do you honestly believe he'll have a successful cash-in for the World Heavyweight Championship or the WWE Championship? Now, there's always the possibility he could win Money in the Bank and he could cash in for the Intercontinental title. Maybe they're throwing us off the scent. Maybe he's so obsessed over becoming the Intercontinental Champion, Sami Zayn says, I've moved on. Maybe Gable wins Money in the Bank, and that very same night, they're in Canada, that very same night, unless Money in the Bank is the main event, but he could cash in on Sami Zayn. If Sami's going to be defending the title on that show, I don't even know if that's going to work out because, yeah, the Money in the Bank match may not happen, you know, early enough in the show. But I'm trying to game this out, and that's the only thing. Like, I look ahead, he's not winning the World Heavyweight Championship anytime in the near future. Chad Gable just re-signed with WWE. Could he win the World Heavyweight Championship in a couple of years? Who knows? Anything's possible. Even that's unlikely. But no, he's not going to win the World Heavyweight title. So it's just going to be another loss. Or he'll cash in, and he'll cash in unsuccessfully, and he'll join that wonderful list of people, including Baron Corbin. He'll go down in infamy. I mean, we had Austin Theory cash in or attempt to cash in his Money in the Bank for the United States Championship. So there is precedent for cashing in on something other than the world title. And it actually would work for Gable because you could just talk about how obsessed he is over, you know, beating Sammy and getting the IC title. But failing that, it looks like they may truly have moved away from this, and they're just going to focus on Gable and Otis, and maybe they'll put the Creeds with him still. But if they just don't put that title on him, and we went through all of this for nothing, I mean, what a fucking waste of time. And what a fucking swing and miss that would be. So, first he has to qualify. But if he qualifies, I think there's a better chance of him cashing in for the IC and not the world. And he could do that at Money in the Bank. He could do that at SummerSlam. That's the only way to get the train back on the tracks here. Because otherwise, I mean, they have done this man no favors. I'm glad that he's been getting a lot more TV time, unlike the other TV time on the other show. And the segments with the Alpha Academy and Sami Zayn now over these last several weeks have been some of the best segments on the show. But at some point, this man has to start winning. And if they're going to put the Creeds with him, maybe that's when it starts. But there is a point that you reach where it's like, this has gone on for far too long now. You're doing even more damage than what's already been done. There may already be people who are only ever going to see him at a certain level. If he continues to lose and lose and lose, he's damaged goods. No matter what you do with him, it's not going to make a difference. He could win the title. What's it going to mean? He loses every single match that he's in, and then he cashes in, and you know he blindsides the guy and wins the belt. I mean, what does that mean? It doesn't do him any favors. I don't get it. I really don't. We have the new women's tag team champions. Alba Fyre and Isla Dawn interviewed in the back by Jackie Redmond after a video recapped their big win from Clash at the Castle. Alba talked about how they got to win the belt in front of their friends and family. Isla said the hard work starts now and they will take on anyone who gets in their way. That brought in Shayna Baszler and Zoe Stark. Baszler recalled her and Zoe beating them on TV last week. In fact, that is what happened on Raw last Monday. Shayna put Alba to sleep in the Kirifuda clutch. And she also pointed out the fact that the referee missed Jade Cargill clearly tapping out to the Kirifuda clutch on Saturday in the triple threat match, which I pointed out during my review. This woman tapped out. You couldn't avoid it. You had to acknowledge it. Even Michael Cole and Corey Graves on commentary said, is Jade tapping? Like, yes, she is. And the referee's like, stop tapping, stop tapping. So I'm glad they brought it up here. At least they worked it into this promo. So apparently we're sticking with Shayna and Zoe. This is what happens when you only have so many teams. You keep going back to the same ones. I don't know if they're going to just end up putting the belts back on Bianca and Jade, maybe at Money in the Bank. Looks like Shayna and Zoe are going to be up next. So maybe not. Then it becomes a question of what do you do with Bianca and Jade? Are they going to go one-on-one? Is their team over? Is that it? Are we putting an end to that already? Guess we'll find out on Friday. We had Dragon Lee going one-on-one with Carlito. Dragon Lee used a Hurricanrana to pull Carlito off the apron. That took us into a commercial break. Lee caught Carlito in a tree of woe and then double stomped him off the top. Lee set up for a move. He got backdropped, but he came right back and hit a sit-out powerbomb for a near fall. Liv Morgan walked out, dressed in Dom's purple cow vest, and Dominic asked where she got it from because she was getting uncomfortably close. Zelina Vega ran out, shoved Liv into Dom. Joaquin Wilde was out there. He tried to pull Vega away, ended up getting into it with Dominic, who shoved him into the ring steps. Dragon Lee went to the ropes and was tripped up by JD McDonagh. Carlito hit a backstabber on Dragon Lee and pinned him. Holy shit! Carlito won a match. I never thought I'd see the day. But he actually won. He needed some help, of course. But how about that? Carlito picking up a win here. The announcers mentioned the finish to the World Heavyweight Championship match from Saturday between Damian Priest and Drew McIntyre, and what happened with CM Punk, and they showed a video. Now, this was on WWE's socials, because there were people asking the question, and it's a perfectly logical question to ask in a business where you often have to check your brain at the door and suspend your disbelief. Well, why would CM Punk be waiting in the wings in a referee shirt at just that exact moment on Saturday to come out there for the finish? Well, to their credit, and you might still think it's ridiculous, but at least they attempted to explain it. They shot this video from backstage on Saturday showing CM Punk watching the match on a monitor or a screen. And at the moment that the referee got bumped, I presume we couldn't see what he was looking at on screen, but at that moment, Punk decides to jump into action, and he's frantically looking around, and he sees Jessica Carr, and he says, "I need your shirt. Take your shirt off." He wanted her to take her shirt. You know, in some places, that would be considered sexual harassment. This guy's already getting himself into backstage trouble here in this company now. So she had a spare shirt. I think she had a spare one, right? She didn't take it off. And gave him the shirt. And she didn't ask any questions, I guess, as far as like, well, why do you need that for? Or she didn't think enough to like, well, maybe I shouldn't be doing this. But gave him the shirt. He put the referee shirt on. That's where the video cut. So again, at least they attempted to explain. But we had Drew McIntyre out to the ring next, dejected over his loss at Clash at the Castle. Now, we knew that CM Punk was not going to be on the show tonight because CM Punk at the post-show press conference on Saturday said he got permission to not come to Corpus Christi. Instead, he was going home to Chicago to try to get his latest medical update. He was going to try to get medically cleared. And he said that even though I'm a Raw guy, I'm going to be at SmackDown on Friday because SmackDown is in Chicago. They're at the Allstate Arena. They advertised him tonight. So we knew he wasn't going to be here tonight. But McIntyre comes out there. He looks like he just got the phone call that his dog died. I mean, he's obviously very dejected. He could barely even get the words CM Punk out of his mouth as the crowd chanted for CM Punk. And he had to keep stopping every time he would, you know, start this promo. And then he said, I can't do this anymore. He said, screw this company. I quit. And he left the ring. And as he's going down the aisle, Adam Pearce confronts him and tells him, look, there are a million better ways to handle this, but McIntyre just kept walking, and they very abruptly cut to commercial. After the commercial, we get footage of McIntyre. They show he is in the back at the gorilla position. Triple H is there, and Triple H even shoves the camera away like he doesn't want the camera to pick up on what he's saying. I could barely make out what he was saying, but he was trying to basically talk this man down off the ledge and tell him, look, you want to think this through. McIntyre said some stuff to Triple H, stormed off. Adam Pearce continued on after him, but he wasn't having any of it, and he left. And that was the last we saw of Drew McIntyre. And then later on in the show, Michael Cole told us that Drew had gone and deactivated his socials. Can't go to his Twitter page anymore. You know, this would have been more effective if we didn't know that he had just re-signed with the company a couple of months ago. If The Rock had not gone on social media, because they let The Rock be the one to make the announcement, that Drew McIntyre had signed a brand new long-term deal with WWE, this would have been a little more believable. So Drew McIntyre, everybody, the best part of Monday Night Raw for the past 6 months, actually more than 6 months, has quit WWE until Friday, when they are in Chicago for SmackDown, and CM Punk is in his hometown, and CM Punk is in the ring, and he is about to announce, and he may not even be able to have the chance to say it, but I could picture it now. He is in the ring, and he is about to make the announcement that he is medically cleared, and Drew McIntyre savagely attacks this man and extracts a measure of revenge for this man embarrassing him in his home country, in front of his people, in front of his family, and in front of his friends. He goes to CM Punk's hometown and does the same thing to him there. You know what would make that angle even more impactful? And I don't think they're going to do it because I don't think she wants to be part of the show. But just imagine if Punk was going to show up and he's all happy because he just got the great news from his doctor that he's cleared and he's ready to come back. AJ Lee is in the crowd and he blows a kiss to his beloved bride, April. Thank you so much for being there for me. I couldn't have done it without you. You're my rock. Thank you for helping nursing me back to health. There's AJ in the crowd with a big smile on her face. Here comes Drew McIntyre with a fucking tire iron, and he clubs this man right in his injured arm and savagely beats this man. And AJ is in the crowd practically in tears. McIntyre, he could sit down cross-legged in the middle of the ring right next to his dead body, and he can cut his own pipe bomb on Punk. Now that's heat. In Chicago, that's heat. And that's how you keep Punk out of the ring and off television long enough to get to SummerSlam, because CM Punk should not be wrestling before SummerSlam. CM Punk should be saved for SummerSlam. That's the first match between him and Drew McIntyre. You don't want to be doing anything with him at Money in the Bank, especially if he might get hurt again. We don't know, right? He's had some pretty significant injuries over the last couple of years. Why chance it? It's the perfect angle. I'm going to be so upset if they don't do some variation of that, maybe without AJ, but how great would that be? And McIntyre can get a measure of revenge. Tailor-made. If anything, I think it makes that SmackDown show on Friday must-see. More must-see than it was before we found out that CM Punk was going to be there. Today's episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Can you believe that we are already halfway through the year? One thing I'm proud of is how this show and the channel on YouTube continues to grow. And my goal for the rest of the year is to continue growing and expanding the community that I've built here. That's on a professional level. On a personal level, there are always things I'm not satisfied with. And you may feel the same way. We all need to take a moment to celebrate your wins so far and make adjustments for where you want to be in the future. Therapy can help you take stock of your progress and set goals for the next 6 months. When I first started talking about BetterHelp on this show, I had to try it out myself just to see what all the fuss was about, because if I didn't find it helpful, then neither would any of you. And at the time, I was having trouble sleeping. I just wasn't getting enough of it. And I got to interact with one of their licensed therapists on things that I could be doing to try to fix that. And, you know, I really did find it helpful. You know, she was responsive. She had some good suggestions on what I should be doing. And that was just for sleeping better. You know, since I'm up until all hours of the night sometimes doing these streams, that was just for sleeping. Imagine the whole host of other issues that therapy can help you with. Just having somebody to talk to can be incredibly beneficial and can open your eyes to things that you would never have thought about on your own. You may not have the confidence or the knowledge to deal with your problems by yourself, and that's where BetterHelp can be your better half in that regard. If you're thinking about starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online and designed to work around your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and rest easy knowing that you can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Take a moment. Visit betterhelp.com/solomonster today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Solomonster. We had Dakota Kai and Kairi Sane representing Damage Control against Caden Carter and Katana Chance. Kairi hit the insane elbow to Carter pretty early on, but Katana broke up the pin. Dakota threw Katana out of the ring, and Lyra Valkyria flew out to the ring to go check on her at ringside as the match continued. For whatever reason, Dakota Kai stopped what she was doing and turned her attention to Lyra, who wasn't really bothering her. Carter used the opportunity to give Kairi a DDT. She kicked Dakota, and then Carter and Chance hit their... I think she kicked Dakota out of the ring, and then Carter and Chance... Dakota was in the ring. And then they hit their after-party finish and pinned Dakota Kai. And Lyra Valkyria celebrated with the baby faces when it was over. A nothing match, another loss for Damage Control. This feeds into this ongoing story they're telling with Damage Control, because in the back later, Io Sky was sitting with them as they were talking about their loss. Io Sky does not tolerate losing very well. She won her match earlier in the show. She's going to Money in the Bank. These two can't seem to get it together. So Io says again, and she said this last week as well to them, she says that with Damage Control, something has to change. And if they don't, she will change this herself. So basically, shape up or ship out. Sometimes you got to take matters into your own hands and you got to do it yourself. Io Sky has had enough. Sheamus and Bron Breakker. I love this too. When I heard that they were doing this match, even though I feel pity for Chad Gable, I said, all right, this is a fucking match I can get behind right here. Now, Michael Cole assumed that the winner of this match would earn an Intercontinental title match, but it was never said officially by Sami Zayn or Adam Pearce or anybody else. So, you know, there's an expression. I heard this in a movie once. Assumption is the mother of all fuck-ups. Never assume, because you are likely to be wrong. So anyway, we had Sheamus sending Breakker to ringside, hit him with a clothesline off the apron before rolling him back into the ring. Breakker got up and clotheslined Sheamus back out over the top rope. Breakker then jumped from the apron, and he clotheslined Sheamus over the table. They both went flying over the announce desk. And that took us into the commercial break. Michael Cole wondered if Sheamus was dead from a clothesline. Really? Again, we would get a dead body at the end of the show. All this foreshadowing of death and murder. Little did we know what was to come at the end of the show. Poor Chad Gable. Later on, Sheamus placed Breakker on his shoulders. He was climbing to the middle rope. He was setting up for white noise. Breakker slipped out, though, and got Sheamus seated on the top turnbuckle. And then Bron Breakker, he ran the ropes, and he was standing on the top rope. He was setting up for a Frankensteiner, and he slipped. Now, we had some people have a bad night on the ropes on Saturday, right? We had Jade Cargill. We had Damian Priest. And so it extended here to Raw, because we've seen Bron hit this move before, but this time he slipped. He still decided to follow through with the move, though, even after he slipped. So they both go flying off the top, and this looked like shit. And they're very lucky that neither one of them got hurt, especially Sheamus. So that was very ugly. Sheamus, though, came right back with a standing white noise in the middle of the ring. Breakker put Sheamus down and then set up for a spear in the corner, but Sheamus drilled him with a knee strike as he came charging in. And then he covered him for a near fall. Sheamus hit Breakker with the 10 beats and then set up for the brogue kick when Ludwig Kaiser showed up at ringside. And he grabbed Sheamus's leg and he yanked him down to the mat, dragged him over to the corner, and he slammed Sheamus's bad knee into the ring post, and the referee called for the disqualification. And at that point, I'm like, ugh. You know, like, I kind of saw it coming, but I'm like, eh. But then we get to the post-match. So Sheamus gets the better of Kaiser, tosses him over the barricade into the timekeeper's area. Breaker spears Sheamus on the floor. And you could tell the way that he took that move, Sheamus wanted no part of this spear. Because, like, Breaker comes in and Sheamus is like, he's like covering up. Like, he didn't take it in the, he took it in the most realistic way, if you think about it. Because if I saw somebody like Bron Breakker charging at me like that, I'd also go like this, you know? I don't know what I would do. I'd probably run. He would tackle me from behind. Remember those old commercials, the Terry Tate, the office linebacker commercials? That'd be me trying to run away from him, and I just get fucking tackled to the ground. So officials come out, producers come out. There's Kenny Dykstra, Ken Doan, he's out there. Daivari's out there. And they're trying to get Breakker out of there. And as he's walking by Sami Zayn, the two of them exchange looks. But okay, Braun's going around. He's being escorted out. So meanwhile, while all of the officials are escorting Bron Breakker away, Ludwig Kaiser reemerges from behind that barricade by the timekeeper's area. And he pounces on Sheamus, and there ain't nobody around to stop him. So he takes Sheamus's leg, his right leg, and he places it over the middle ring step. And then Kaiser goes all the way around to the opposite end of the ring, okay, where the aisleway meets the ring. He's going to give himself a running head start. We've seen him do this before, right? He destroyed Kofi Kingston once by doing this. He's going to give himself a head start. And he begins to run around the ring. And they got the perfect camera shot for this. We got an overhead camera view. So at the bottom of your screen, you can see Ludwig Kaiser. He's running and he's circling the ring. On the other side of the ring, Bron Breakker saw what was about to happen. He broke free from the officials. He's running around. Now, he is very fast. And they always talk about this. He runs the ropes. He's been clocked at 23 miles an hour. They mention this all the time. But he's very quick. He is running around the ring as well. When Kaiser rounds the bend, before he could hit Sheamus, whose leg is on the ring steps, Bron Breakker is there to meet him. And Bron Breakker cuts this fucker in half with a spear. So anybody who was going to be talking about the botch, which I'm sure when he got to the back, he was beating himself up over it. Ain't nobody was talking about the botch, except me, I guess. When this match was over, they were going to be talking about that spot. Because that spear was awesome. The way they shot it was awesome. I mean, look, I can't say enough good stuff about the improvement in the camera work since they got rid of you-know-who, and they brought Lee Fitting into the company, and they've tried different types of camera shots and long extended one-shots. Even the way they shot that final segment with the Wyatt stuff at the end, I mean, there's it's just a different feel for the show. Even when they go into the commercial breaks now and they have that replay of whatever the most recent move was, as they fade to commercial, just little things like that make the show feel fresh compared to the way it used to feel. So again, the camera shot they got here was perfect. It looked great. Breakker and Zayn, they start jawing at one another. Officials are trying to keep them apart. Breakker broke free, and he actually gave Sammy a shove. And Sammy was hot, and he was trying to get at this guy, and they're holding him back. He even grabbed the giant Prime hydration inflatable bottle and threw it at Braun. I mean, he was pissed. For a match that wasn't even announced in advance coming into this show, I wasn't expecting a clean finish, and of course we didn't get one. But what we got up to that point was good. Even with the top row botch, I mean, what we got up to that point was good. It was good, but I know these guys are capable of having a much better match than this. This was a TV match that served the purpose to get us to the post-match angle that we got. But if these two ever get a chance to go out there on a PLE, either in a singles match or a triple threat match or something, I know that these guys can tear the house down. The post-match angle was very well done, though. Very well done. Now, technically, Sheamus won this match. He won by disqualification, but a win is a win. But there was no mention of him being number one contender. And it was Sami Zayn and Bron Breakker who had the face-off at the end of this. So what it seems like to me is that Sheamus and Kaiser are going to, either meet in the Money in the Bank ladder match, or they're going to meet in a qualifying match. They may. It looks like they're doing triple threats, so it may be Sheamus and Kaiser and somebody else. They're going to go off, though, and they're going to do their thing, and I think we may end up getting Sami Zayn and Bron Breakker for the Intercontinental title of Money in the Bank. Again, the Chad Gable stuff, I've already talked about it. It looks like they're moving on. Possible he could win the briefcase and cash in for the IC title, but it really does feel like they're moving on. They told their story they wanted to tell with Chad Gable. The story now is him and the Alpha Academy, him and Otis. And I just don't know that the Intercontinental title fits into this story at all. I hope it does. I hope they find a way. But after what we saw on the show tonight, I'm not nearly as optimistic as I was before. Now, backstage, Dominic was continuing the search for his cow vest. Now, of course, we all know who had the vest, but he's looking around for it. And he spots Liv Morgan in the hallway in the back. And he walks over to her and he asks, "Can I have my vest back?" Like she's bullying him. "Can I please have my vest back?" And she said, "You can have it if you want to take it off me yourself." And she said, "Look, if you're nervous, I'll help you out a little bit here." And she starts to unzip the vest. She unzipped it, I would say, maybe like a quarter of the way down. And then she wants Dominic to do the rest. Like, "Are you nervous?" Of course he's nervous. He's got a boner.
"He's giving me a stiffy."
"Giving you a what?"
"Yeah, a stiffy. Of course the guy's nervous." So he starts to unzip her. While in the background, guess who just so happened to turn the corner? He's on his phone and he looks up. It's Damian Priest and he sees what's going on. And he says, "Dom." And Dom's like, "Oh, I'm just trying to get my vest back. I'm just trying to get my cow vest back. That's all." So he tells Dom, "Go grab your stuff and go to the clubhouse." And he takes his vest and he leaves. And Priest is with Liv Morgan now. And he tells Liv, "Look, leave him alone. He wants nothing to do with you." And she says that she thinks Dom wants everything to do with her. And she leaves. And Damian calls her loca to close out the segment here. Pero ella es sexy así que está bien. So we go to Karrion Kross. Karrion Kross is in the back with Scarlett and addressed Kofi Kingston and Xavier Woods. Kross was supposed to wrestle Xavier Woods on this show, unless I'm just imagining things here. They advertised that match for this show tonight. Now, I'm not devastated that we didn't get it. I'm not going to cry. But they advertised it, and then earlier this afternoon, they pulled it. So obviously, plans change. So he issued a challenge to either member of New Day to a match where they would each leave their friends in the back. So Kross would leave the Final Testament in the back, and whichever member of the New Day accepted, the other one would stay in the back. He said he hoped it was Kofi, though, because we all know that he would rather leave Woods in the back anyway. So then we cut to the New Day, and Woods spoke first, and then Kofi cut him off as he was in mid-sentence, and said that Kross hasn't done anything during his time here. He's got one accolade to his name, and that's being the NXT champion. So who is he to be giving them advice? Woods started speaking again, and Kofi cut him off again, and he accepted the challenge. He took up Karrion Kross for his one-on-one match next week. And if you looked at Xavier Woods, I wouldn't say that he had a pissed off look on his face, but he had a rather mildly annoyed look on his face that he got interrupted by his friend here. So they're teasing dissension. Now, I still don't see them breaking up the New Day. Frankly, I don't really see the point in breaking up the New Day. What is it really going to do for either one of them at this point? But it's not a bad idea to tease it and at least get people thinking that, hey, maybe they are going to break up, right? It'd probably be the most interesting thing they've done with the New Day in years. But do I see them breaking up? I don't. I do not. The main event of this show was a triple threat Money in the Bank qualifier on the men's side. Jey Uso, Finn Balor, and Rey Mysterio. Balor took a powder on the outside once the bell rang. So Jey and Rey kick things off here. Balor runs in. Rey takes him down with an arm drag. Moments later, Rey dove from the ring onto Finn Balor on the floor. And that took us into the commercial break. Kevin Dunn's Beaver, what's going on? He says the generic background music makes it better. Well, look, I wanted to. I actually created a version of that with the actual HBK music, but for obvious reasons, I can't use that. So I said, I got to come up with a sick beat here that I can use in the background, and that's what I came up with. So I'm glad you enjoy it. It's the best I can do. So Rey got Finn Balor in position for the 619. When he went for the move, Balor regrouped and put Rey down with a clothesline. Jey returned and dropped Balor with a step up enziguri, but then Balor caught him with an overhead kick. All three men were down, heading into another break, which came not 3 minutes after the last one. Rey brought Balor off the top with a Hurricanrana. Jey speared Mysterio for a two count only. Balor shoved Rey or Jey. Easy to get them confused. Balor shoved Jey off the top, and Rey hit Balor with a 619 to the gut because he was out on the apron yelling at the crowd, had his back turned, so he got it right in the abs. Rey followed with a sliding splash to the outside and a 619. Mysterio also gave Jey a 619, and then Rey gave both men a 619 simultaneously. Rey went to the top, but Dom ran out. Here he is again, this fucker. Dom ran out to grab his father's foot and stop him. Rey knocked him down. McDonough, though, dropped Rey. JD McDonough and Carlito, they attacked Rey Mysterio, but Braun Strowman ran out to his music. Here comes Braun. You know, we've seen Braun do a lot of running spots. I don't mean like the Strowman Express running around the ring. Like he's doing a lot of running. He chased them through the crowd here. You know, getting a big guy like that to do a lot of running doesn't sound like a good idea to me. He shouldn't be running. People should be running from him. I don't know that he should be doing all the running, though. But he ran through the crowd, and he chased away the Judgment Day. So now back to the match. Jey super kicked Balor for two. Balor came back with a sling blade. Balor hit Rey with a coup de grace. But Jey followed immediately. Like, as soon as he came down for the double stomp and he went to go pin him, Jey was up on the top rope, and he came right down on Finn Balor with an Uso splash and pinned him to win. Jey Uso becomes the first man to qualify this year for Money in the Bank. Now, I figured Jey was winning this match. It's kind of like Io in her match, right? It was pretty obvious who the winners were going to be. But as we were getting towards the end of the show, and I realized that we had not yet seen the Uncle Howdy stuff, and I remembered when Jey Uso came out in France at Backlash for the first time and they gave him the Firefly treatment. And I thought, well, maybe, because after that, Jey said, yeah, they're mine now. The Fireflies are mine. And I thought, oh, that's interesting. Maybe they're building to the Wyatt clan attacking Jey Uso. So being that I knew they were still coming up, I thought, there was a chance that maybe they would cost Jey the match. They would make him their first target and Balor would win. Because Balor was already teasing, you know, cashing in. I'm not going to cash in on you, Damian. I'm going to cash in on Cody. But like, you don't really know if he's telling the truth or not. And maybe Balor would qualify. But he didn't. And so Jey Uso, which makes sense. Again, Jey Uso, he's got to be in a feature match on that show. And I think Jey Uso, without even knowing who else is in the match yet, yeah, I mean, technically, he's the only one that we know of who's in the match, but he's got to be the early favorite on the men's side, I think, to win Money in the Bank. I think, you know, having a babyface on one side and a heel on the other is probably the way they're going to do things. And I have Tiffany Stratton winning the women's briefcase. That would mean a men's babyface is likely to win. And if that's the case, you got Jey Uso, but you know what? For his sake, I'm holding out hope for Chad Gable. Maybe my idea is something that could very well end up happening where he cashes in, but for the Intercontinental title. just try to salvage this story for him. It might be the only way. It may be the only way. But then we got the big angle to close out this show. Jay was in the crowd, and he is celebrating with all the fans, and they're all bopping up and down. And then we hear, as the lights are being turned off section by section, those same sound effects that we had when Bray Wyatt would come out as the Fiend, or when he made his return a couple of years ago, they did the same thing. You heard the sounds, the lights were turned out. We hear that, right? Instantly, you think of Bray Wyatt. Eventually, the lights go out completely. And then we heard the opening chords to Bray's last theme song, the Shatter Song by Code Orange. And I think it might be a piano. It was just like a constant piano key. I think it was piano. So they never actually played the music, but you could tell, like, I immediately thought of Shatter. And I thought they were going to play the song. Then we see the doorway with the light shining behind it. Eventually the door opens and we see the light shining through and all the smoke and the fog. And we see a zombie-like creature who is clearly Nikki Cross with a very Leatherface-esque mask on her face, but you could still tell who it is. She begins crawling towards a lantern. The lantern is on the floor. Then she gets to the lantern. She doesn't grab it, but she stands up and she points behind her towards the door, towards the back. And at that point, the camera followed through the door into the back area. So now we're backstage and everything is dark and blue and just very grim. And again, you still have that chord, that key is being played over and over and over again. And it was very eerie, and it really did resemble a scene out of a horror movie. We see various men. I was trying to see who it was. There may have been some other wrestlers. Maybe you guys can identify who they were. But there were some guys piled up on the floor, you know, unconscious. And then we see a large man standing over them in a mask, who I presume was Eric Rowan. Again, I think Rowan was the one in the Ramblin' Rabbit mask with the giant mallet that said help on it. And he's standing over them. The camera continues into the gorilla position, and it looks like a bomb went off. Everything is just torn apart. The lights are flickering. They're sparking. Sparks are flying. And there's another masked man who is sitting nearby. I think he was sitting cross-legged on top of something. I presume that would be Dexter Lumis, although we never saw their faces. But again, they're wearing the costumes of many of the Firefly Funhouse characters from the Fiend days. Then we get another masked person who, as the camera continues on, there's another masked person, I'm going to assume, Joe Gacy. Or maybe one was Joe Gacy and the other was Dexter Lumis. But again, these are the names that are rumored to be part of this faction. And you know, I don't remember which one was Mercy the Buzzard, but again, a lot of these characters were represented. And that person, that masked person who may have been Joe Gacy, was spotted near a fallen Chad Gable. Chad Gable is sitting on the ground, propped up against, I guess, one of the equipment cases. And he has, now I'll show this to you again. I'll put this picture back up here. This is what we saw. I mean, I have to laugh. It looks like he got shot. Poor Chad Gable got shot here, right in the side of the head. And that is where he is sitting. So then we see a final masked man, and this is Uncle Howdy. This is the man himself. This is Bo Dallas. He's strolling through the hallway, and he's leading his crew out onto the stage. And you see, as they walk out, the fans are cheering. You see all the fireflies in the crowd are lighting up the arena. And we have the new faction, and they are posing out there on stage. This right here was the parting shot that we got here at the end of Monday Night Raw. And Uncle Howdy says, "We're here," and blows the lantern out. And that is how they went off the air. Now you see here, we have Howdy in the background. That's one. You see Nikki Cross is on the floor. That's two. Mercy the Buzzard is three. I presume the guy in the pig mask, that's Huskus. And then Ramblin' Rabbit. So that's five. I don't know if there will be six, but they are calling themselves the Wyatt Six. S-I-C-K-S. Because you see, they're all sick in the head. But I said it earlier, you know, this was darker than almost anything that I can remember them allowing Bray Wyatt to do on TV. He was always going for the very eerie, kind of disturbing stuff. Sometimes it didn't even make any sense. It made sense to him, but like it wouldn't make any sense to me. But he would have all these wild ideas, and we had these creepy vignettes, but this was different. This was bodies strewn around everywhere. This was like mayhem. Complete mayhem and carnage had gone on in the back. And now the key is in the follow-up, because what they did here, this was very well done. I love the way this was shot. I love the feel. Maybe it's because I like horror movies and I'm into that kind of thing. Some people aren't. Some people probably are like, what is this doing on my wrestling show? I dig stuff like that. You know, when it's done well, I dig stuff like that. So it was done very well, but this is night one. I felt the same way when The Fiend debuted. When Bray Wyatt debuted as The Fiend at SummerSlam against Finn Balor, and he came out and to that music, and he had that lantern with the stretched out mouth and everything. I mean, that was freaky as fuck. But that whole entrance, that whole presentation, and the initial days of the Firefly Funhouse, I thought, this is brilliant. This is so different than anything that we've seen. And clearly this guy, he's not all there. He's having a psychotic break and you know, he believes all this stuff and sees it. And that's what we're going to end up finding out. Like, I'm trying to make sense of what we're seeing here. But, you know, it was just so different for a wrestling show. But then as time went on, it had its drawbacks. And people, wrestlers, have talked about how difficult it was to work with him and that character and come out of it better than they were going in. It didn't happen very often. Now, from what I understand, and this was something that PW Insider reported the other day, the belief is that there were not going to be a lot of supernatural elements to this gimmick. So I take that to mean that it's going to be more grounded in reality. I mean, if you look at what they did here, we have a magic door. We have a lot of stuff that's not necessarily totally grounded in reality to begin with. I don't want to see them go full Undertaker with magical powers and all kinds of bullshit like that. If they keep this grounded in reality, and it's a band of misfits who are demented and they're tormented in some way, and they've lost their minds, and they're very dangerous, and maybe they believe in, you know, what they believe in, and they see these things and they have these visions, but you treat it in a realistic way as much as you can. I think that would be intriguing. You know, it's like the patients escaping the psych ward, basically, right? If that's the gimmick, if that's the idea, I think that could work. But what happens when the bell rings? You know, at the end of the day, it is a wrestling show. And so I think the tale will be told when we find out how do they use this and apply this in a wrestling sense. They're going to have to fight people. They're going to have to feud with people. They're going to have to make people their target. When that happens, and we have to get promos, and we have to get actual matches in the ring, what is that going to look like? I don't know. It may not be good. Or maybe it'll be just fine. And they can keep finding different ways to keep this fresh and vibrant and interesting. I hope so. You know, they got me hooked here with this first segment. But I do wonder going forward, what is this ultimately 3 months from now, 4 months from now going to look like? We're not there yet, so it's only the first night. I don't know. Can only speculate on that. But just judging based on what they did here, I thought this was very well done. And like I said earlier, if Bray Wyatt was around and could see this, what we saw here, it looked like something that would be right from his mind. I mean, this is the sort of thing I think he would look at and smile and be very proud of. And I'm sure it can't be easy for, you know, his brother to go out there. Even watching the Bray Wyatt documentary, you could tell, you know, the entire time, you know, Bo was having a tough time keeping it together, even after, you know, the time that's gone by, just talking about his brother. So I'm sure that was very emotional for him. He's been waiting a very long time. When they brought Bray back to the company, they brought him back too. And he's been waiting in the wings, waiting for his opportunity. Well, now he's going to get it. Is he going to wrestle in the Howdy mask? Is he going to take the mask off and reveal his identity? Or is that the way he's going to wrestle when he works? Are they all going to wear masks when they work? They might. Bray did. When he was the Fiend, right? He wore a mask. I don't know. Until we see them in the ring, I don't know. It's hard to judge. But this was a hell of an ending to the show. And I'm curious how they follow up on it, if at all, on Friday. Or is this exclusively going to be a Monday Night Raw thing? That would be kind of funny to me, actually, if all of these psychos here in this group were to adhere to the rules of the brand split and stay exclusively to Monday Night Raw. I don't know. That would kind of make me very amused. But we shall see. One thing I am hoping for, though, is that we get a Drew McIntyre sighting on Friday. And if we don't, I'm going to be very disappointed. All right, let's take a look at your super chats here. Let's go through them, because you guys have killed it so far tonight, and I want to hear from you. So let's go back and take a look at the early ones here, and then we are going to go through this entire list. I got you covered. I got you all covered. Let me scroll back here. There's a deluge of them. But some of them are not here in this list. So let's go back to our boy, the real CS. 02, getting us started here. Hey, CS, what's going on, man? He's got a couple of super chats here for $20. I'm usually patient, but what the hell are they doing with Gable? Seems like they are moving from him winning the title again.
With a tear in my eye!
Since they had Braun confront Sammy tonight. In my opinion, if they screw him over again, he made a mistake staying with this company. Well, you know what? They got him. Signed, sealed, and delivered. Right? That's the risk you run. Once they got you under contract, they've got you locked in. I want to believe that he's going to be fine. I want to believe that the Creeds are coming and there's going to be a turnaround for him, because I have to believe it. Look at this. Becky Lynch just subscribed. Yeah, CS, you have every right to feel that way. I feel the same way. I'm just hoping for the best. Chris Mikesell, would you have Cash have a singles run? He's talking about Cash Wheeler. Have a singles run or keep him off TV? Cash should not be held back for Dax's dumb decision. I respect him for punching Brett's attacker. Well, you know what that means, though? He'll have more time to spend at the gun range. No, I mean, what are you going to do with him? What's he going to do? There's no role for him on TV. There's no big Cash Wheeler singles run coming, so I don't see the point. They have enough people as it is to get TV time. Donnie Yasu, I like Sami Zayn, I like Sheamus, but I want Braun to destroy them both. I want Braun to destroy everybody. I am fully on board with this guy. I am too, man. I am too. I mean, so far with him, so far so good. I mean, the way they have handled him so far, they've done their best to try to protect him and position him as a killer. I think people are taking to it. I think it's working. And I think they have to just stay the course. Prince Vegeta, 95. With the 1999, they are probably going to have Punk win every match in this program. Ever since Triple H took over, he's had Drew lose every big match. I can see them having Punk embarrass Drew every step of the way, a la Roadrunner Wile E. Coyote. No, I kind of feel like Wile E. Coyote is Chad Gable, not Drew McIntyre. At least Drew McIntyre has been World Heavyweight Champion before. No, they're not going to have Punk win every match. In fact, if it were up to me, I'd have McIntyre win the first match. Donnie says, oh my god, they killed Gable, you bastards. Fire Panda, the door has opened and they are here. Revel in what you are, Solomonster. Oh, I'm reveling. I loved it. I thought it was a great segment. Crazy. From Chad Gable to Chad Disable. Otis owes Uncle Howdy a beer. Joshua Edwards. Man, there were a lot of early ones that came in. Joshua Edwards, awesome debut. Tonight made WWE very interesting. There was a lot going on the show tonight. Between the Howdy stuff at the end, the Money in the Bank qualifiers, the Liv Morgan story is still continuing, the Gable stuff, whatever the fuck they're doing there. Moving Sammy on to Bron Breakker, possibly for the Intercontinental title. Drew's story where he quit the company. There's a lot going on, and that's a good thing. That's the kind of thing that makes Monday Night Raw interesting. Even if every segment doesn't hit, and not every segment did tonight, there were a lot of matches that were just kind of there. But there were a lot of different things going on, a lot of storyline directions happening tonight. Hey, Trill Mexican, thank you for the $10. He says, in regards to Hogan's beer, via episode 866, he's doing a free MNG, meet and greet, to promote it. I met him last Thursday in Miami for free. I just celebrated 13 years of sobriety and won't be drinking his beer. Well, salute to you, my friend. Congratulations on 13 years. This is water, just so you know. Interesting, though, that Hogan himself just said last year, in fact, that he no longer drinks beer because basically he was hitting the alcohol a little too hard, so he quit. And now here he is promoting his beer that is going to bring, in his words, all Americans together. All Americans from all walks of life are going to be united by Hulk Hogan's Real American Beer. There's only 4.2% alcohol by volume. I'll tell you something right now. You want to bring all Americans together in this world? It's going to take something a hell of a lot stronger than 4.2% alcohol by volume. That's not going to cut it. Chris AXC, that was downright cool. Now, in all seriousness, how do they translate that to wrestling? What's their goal? Are there any champions in this faction? Well, that's what I mean. I mean, I just talked about that. I mean, that's the question here. Is the focus going to be wrestling with them at all? Not that they're not going to do matches, but I'm not sure that's even going to be the focus. You know, they may just be sort of the requisite horror faction on the show where they just focus mostly on doing spooky skits and, you know, vignettes and things of that nature. And it's not so much about the wrestling. I feel like it has to be, though. You know, you have 5 or 6 different people in this group. It better be about the wrestling. If they're going to be on TV at some point, it's got to be about the wrestling. But what those matches are going to look like, how good they're going to be, I don't know that you can even judge them by the usual criteria that you would judge them about how good or bad a wrestling match is. I couldn't do it with The Fiend. It just wasn't, you know, it just wasn't the same. You had to just look at it and grade it differently. And there were just a lot of matches that just didn't hit with me. You know, the Mountain Dew Pitch Black thing with LA Knight, you know, I didn't like that. Some people did. I thought it sucked. It was an interesting concept, but I didn't like it. Yeah, I appreciate them trying new things, but sometimes they try it and it works and sometimes it doesn't. That's why I'm taking a wait and see approach here. You know, I give it a lot of love for what they did tonight, but I may not be giving it a lot of love in 6 months. You know, we just have to wait and see what happens. Prince Vegeta. I really didn't like the main event on Saturday. Damian Priest kicked out of 2 Claymores. That kind of buried Drew's finish. Priest was only mid-card a few months ago. Yeah, but you know what? I mean, they've been pushing him pretty hard for a while, though. They've been very high on him since, really, I think, since that street fight with Bad Bunny. Yeah, you know, you would get these reports about how high they are on him, and he's impressed a lot of people behind the scenes. The Judgment Day has been the focal point on Monday nights now for, I mean, fuck, what, a year and a half now? You know, what the Bloodline was to SmackDown, in effect, is what the Judgment Day has been to Raw. And he has now assumed a leadership position. This is how you build a main eventer. How are people supposed to buy into Damian Priest as a main eventer if he's not given the chance to main event? You know, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. Oh, I don't see him as a main eventer, but then he never main events. Well, what do you expect? He needs matches like that. He needs to be able to go out there. And if you have main eventers kicking out of people's finishers, then he has to be able to kick out of a Claymore kick. If you want people to take him seriously at that level, then he should be doing the same things they are. The only way that's ever going to work. Josiah, thank you for the $2. Psychopathic Savior. Best end to a Raw in a long time. Hope next week is pure chaos, like when the NWO attacked the whole roster in WCW. That's what I pitched in my Clash at the Castle review for this show. They kind of did that. Not exactly, but that's kind of what they did at the end of the show. I think it should happen again on Friday. Why stop on Monday? Thank you, though. Thank you for the $20, man. The Real CS with the $9.99. I get why SmackDown doesn't get one, but why is NXT the only WWE show with an overrun option? And didn't Raw used to have one a few years ago? Raw had an overrun for a very long time. But here's the thing about the overrun. If you can't get your shit in 3 hours, then you're doing something wrong. They have a three-hour show. There is no reason that WWE cannot fit everything that they need to in those 3 hours. It's longer than SmackDown. It's longer than NXT. SmackDown can't have an overrun because they're on Fox. When they move to USA, I don't know if they will or not, because USA doesn't give one to Raw. So I don't know if they would give one to SmackDown. NXT? Yeah, why not give NXT an overrun? But Raw is 3 hours. Okay, you got to be able to fit your shit in those 3 hours. That's just ridiculous. There should never be a week where the show ends and you weren't able to do your final angle, or the show ends and a match gets cut short. Like, that should just not be happening. I'm sorry. On a 3 hour show, that should not be happening. You can't fit it in that period of time, then you are doing something wrong. Aaron Ruggiero with the $50 Gunthar. Our first Gunthar bomb of the night from Aaron. Honestly, a very enjoyable Raw. Only issues I have are Gable and Dragon Lee losing. Gable can be excused, though, after him being fucking murdered at the end, so we'll see where that goes, at least. Also, rest in peace to everyone that was in Gorilla. Yeah, I guess, does that mean that Triple H is no more? Is the Triple H era done? Triple H was in Gorilla earlier. Who else is in Gorilla usually? Michael Hayes, right? That mean Michael Hayes is a goner, and Bobby Roode and Shane Helms? Does Billy Kidman still work there? I don't even know if Billy Kidman still works there. Okay, now we're caught up with your list here. We got to talk about Raph, because Raph dropped a $20 super chat and said, "Oh my God, they killed Gable. Perfect way to celebrate my birthday." Killing Gable is the perfect way to celebrate your birthday. This and the Celtics win. I got back into WWE in April. Thank you, Solo, for being here every week to bring us so much joy. Thought I should give back. Well, I appreciate that very much. And I am very happy to have you with me, and all of you with me, all 15 or 1600 that we have right now. I'm very happy to have you all here with me. Base Beerus says, moment of silence for Shorty G. Barry MK. What they did with Chad is Boss Man WrestleMania 15 level of how are they going to bring him back after this? Well, I mean, we don't know that he got shot or bludgeoned. He may have just tripped and hit his head. Maybe he'll have amnesia. I just had somebody email me yesterday on the show and ask about amnesia angles in wrestling. Maybe he's going to wake up and not remember his name. He's going to think he's Shorty G again. This poor fucking guy. Sid Fishy, best stand-up, George Carlin or Richard Pryor? They were both legendary at what they do, but I'm a George Carlin guy. To me, Carlin will always be the best. Ragnarok, happy Monday, Solomonster. Question, once the Creed turn happens, what do you do with Otis, Tozawa, and Maxine long-term? Not sure where they all go. I will tell you that long term, I think that they are probably doomed. I really don't see there being anything. Even Otis, I think, is going to have a very low ceiling. I just don't see them doing much with them once this angle runs its course. Otis will have the most potential because we should get Gable and Otis at least. But, you know, Tozawa, they're not going to do anything with him. Maxine, it depends on how good she gets. She has to keep, you know, wrestling and getting her reps in, and maybe one day she'll turn into a highly competent performer and she'll be challenging for titles. But that's a long ways down the road. I think once this Alpha Academy stuff is over, so too is their push. Base Beera says, Fiend killed Ramblin' Rabbit with the mallet once. No, he killed him with the mallet multiple times. It was more than once. A. Lavelle with the $12 learning tree. What's up, Solo Monster? Hope you're doing well. They got Chad Gable looking like a corpse from the beginning of a Law and Order episode. You know what? That's true. That's true. That is what he... Like, normally you have the beginning of the episode. And, you know, whatever happens. And then they cut to the dead body. And the detectives are in there. And, yeah, Gable looked like the dead body. Now we got to figure out who done it. Poor guy. Yuri, the Bray homage was beautiful and masterfully done. The completionist with the $4.99. They absolutely murked poor Gable. He has been shooshed. He has been shooshed forever. Y2Ken with the $25 Bree mode says Gable kind of had it coming with how he has treated Maxine and Alpha Academy. If Otis wasn't going to do anything, the Wyatt family did. How do we know Otis didn't do it? We don't know that the Wyatts did it. Maybe Otis saw the perfect opportunity once he saw what was going on in the back, and maybe he nerfed Gable himself. He could turn this into a whodunit storyline. Alex says, Brother Solo, a fantastic debut to Uncle Howdy's new faction. I believe the million-dollar question is, what do their matches look like? Are there specific members within the faction that you see holding gold in the future? No, I wouldn't say specific members. Not really. I can't say that I see Nikki Cross, for example, holding the women's title, you know, anytime soon. Could I see them holding tag team gold? Maybe two members hold the tag belts, maybe, but I'm not even sure titles matter here, you know? Is that their goal, to win titles? We saw how that went with The Fiend. That didn't end very well. I don't see gold in their near future. The completionist, Love is Blind. ABK, oh my God, there it is. There's the $412 bomb. So glad to have our boy back with us. ABK, I give you the Larry Zbyszko salute. He did it at the beginning of every Nitro. I do it only for select people. I do it for you, my friend. Thank you very much. Hisco, 95. The $27 super... Which one is that? I don't even know which one. Which one is that listed below? Greetings from Chile, Solo. As a new viewer, I've enjoyed your content a lot recently. You're one of the smartest wrestling content creators out there. Oh, come on now. As for tonight's Raw, I wish Rock didn't spoil Drew resigning. We know him quitting is a work. Well, we know it's a work no matter what, but yes, it would have hit a little bit better, I think, if we knew he didn't just sign a big fat new contract 2 months ago. But, Pisco, thank you very much. Greetings from Chile. It's one place I've never been to. Maybe one day. I've been to Colombia. I've been to Costa Rica. I haven't been to Chile. I haven't been to Brazil or Ecuador. Argentina. El Mase, Tony Khan did it first with the Texas Chainsaw Massacre match. Yes, but this was not a match. That's the difference. Thank you for the $40. El Masé. Arabian Night, the massacre. Tonight was the 20-plus commercials I counted. Yeah, you know, it's getting... It's not even... Like, I understand commercials are necessary. You know? Even here on YouTube. Commercials are part of the game. But, my God, like... You have a match where they go to commercial, and literally, not even 3 minutes later, they go to another commercial. How are you expected to get into these matches? It's the placement of these commercials, but also the fact that it's a 3-hour show. The reason it feels that way is because there are more commercials than you're going to find on SmackDown or NXT. It's a longer show. That's why I'm hoping, you know, when they go to Netflix, not that there won't be any commercials, there will be. But there's no way it's going to be this bad. It's got to be an improvement over what we have now. I don't see how it could possibly be as bad or worse than what we have now. So I, for one, welcome our Netflix overlords and look forward to when Raw finally moves in January. I'm counting down the days. Isaac, thoughts on the news of Bad Blood returning? I talked about that on episode 866. I'm indifferent towards the whole thing. I mean, it's not a pay-per-view title that I ever thought was, you know, something they needed to bring back. But bringing back Hell in a Cell, maybe to blow off the McIntyre and Punk feud, is something I like. That's what I would do. Have the first match at SummerSlam, rematch at Bash in Berlin, blow it off inside the cell. Apparently, they're looking at doing it on the day of the anniversary of the Shawn Michaels Undertaker match, which is the day before my birthday. So I guess I may be working double that weekend. Great. Hoffenheim, you deserve the top 10, Solo. Thank you very much. I was very happy to see that we were back in the top 10 this week, number 8 for all wrestling podcasts in the world on Apple Podcasts. Thank you for that. Jerome Eugenio, did you break out the Diva stopwatch for the women's tag match tonight? I did not, but I may have to if we have more matches like that. Oz and Glorious with the $5 super chat. A multi-million-dollar production team with an $80 smoke machine and third best haunted house in town quality masks make for Kirkland brand Slipknot. That's a mouthful right there. Now, you know what I miss? I miss Gwar. Remember Gwar had that giant, whatever the fuck it was, monster or whatever, it would like eat people on stage? It's like this long costume. It looked like some giant, I don't know what it was. Only reason I even knew about Gwar was from the old Beavis and Butthead cartoon. Whatever happened to them? Oppenheim, a torn meniscus heals pretty fast. 2 months is realistic. All right, there you go. I thought it was longer, but he says 2 months. Slapping 45. What are we slapping? What are we slapping? We slapping hands? We slapping asses? What are we slapping? Chances Gable disappears for a while after being literally killed by the Wyatt Six. Just as it seems he's about to be pushed, they do this. What a shame. I wouldn't read too much into it until we get to next week. He may well be on the show next week with a bandage on his head. We've seen people rammed in cars. We've seen so many things, and people are back on TV the next week. So I'm expecting Chad Gable to be back on TV next week. Samoan Fan 101. I think I'm cute. I got gold medals. I got the moves that make them all tap out. The angle slam. The ankle lock. Marty Jannetty. Still can't walk. I'm just a sexy Kurt. I'll make your ankle hurt. It's one of the all-time great segments on SmackDown. Oh, rest in peace, Sherry Martel. David Thering with the $50 Gunthar Bomb. What's up, Solo Monster? Certainly a very newsworthy Raw tonight with Rollins returning. Dominic and Liv, Drew McIntyre, Uncle Howdy's debut. Gable and Otis. Curious if you were holding the pen creatively, what's next for Uncle Howdy and his faction? I don't know. I don't know who I would want to program them with. I don't know if it would be Howdy himself. Is he going to be wrestling, or is he going to have his disciples go after somebody? I honestly don't know. What I would be doing is stuff similar to what we had tonight. It's kind of the Nexus blueprint. You know, the Nexus had that initial attack on John Cena and CM Punk back when he was wearing his lucha mask. But that was a very effective angle. And then they did similar angles on TV. They weren't necessarily targeting any one person. They were just wrecking shit. They were beating people up if they happened to be in the wrong place at the wrong time. I'd keep this going for a little while until we kind of figure out, okay, who do we want to make their target? And I don't know who I would want in that role. I don't know who I would trust to be in that position as their first opponent, knowing they're going to get beat. It has to be somebody with a name, but all the key names right now on the show are accounted for. Are they a heel faction? Are they a babyface faction? I mean, based on what we saw at the end of the show, you would think they would be heels. I mean, they're killing people. We don't even know if they're going to be babyfaces or heels, you know, and that'll affect who they work with. So, I don't know. I kind of wanted to play out a little bit more just to see what they do with it. Base Beerus says, our U.S. champion beat... Yeah, that's right. You know, Jumpin' Jeff Farmer in the chat says that Chad is on the show next week. So he has a match on the show. I'm fully expecting him to be there. I suppose it's possible he could always get bounced, but he'll be back next week. Base Beerus says, our U.S. champion beat up a meathead YouTuber recently. Yeah, our U.S. champion was also off the show playing in a Tetris tournament, so it's good to know. Uffman says, has Triple H, I owe you one, pal, to Chad Gable. Oh, he owes him more than one. He owes him a few. Roscoe P. Coltrane. Thank you for the super chat. Rizzo with the five. I'm such a good friend to you in the chat that if Liv left her hotel key, I would take the risk for you all and take it. I'll bet you would. I'll bet you would. Base Beerus, I'm a punk hater now after Clash at the Castle. It's good to see you all coming around. Took you long enough. Rizzo says, what if he cashes in on Sammy for the IC title? That's exactly what I pitched. Great minds. Great minds. Dark Effect had no message, but Dark Effect also dropped a $100 super chat. Wow. You believe this guy? You believe this guy? Got my voodoo doll over here. Talking to the voodoo doll. You believe this guy? Do you believe Dark Effect? Dark Effect, you are saved from a voodoo curse. I will not curse you. I will thank you. Rizzo with the 10, my thought solo, if the Money in the Bank match is first and Gable wins, then Alpha Academy attacks Sammy, and then Gable cashes in and finally wins the championship. I don't think this is over yet. Well, that's why I laid it out, because that's the only path towards that title now that I see for him. If he has to qualify, he wins, and it's early enough in the show, you could still have him take that title in Canada. You don't even have to wait until SummerSlam. There's still a chance. I'm holding out hope, but I am losing hope by the day. Suplex. Don't let WWE fool you. Uncle Howdy was framed. He didn't murder Chad Gable. It was Otis who came back to finish the job and placed him backstage as a cover-up. The Otis 6 is here, Solomonster. I'd be down for that. Bring on the Otis 6. Let's do it. Hoffenheim, drop the likes so we can hit 1,000. I don't know. I don't know if we're going to hit 1,000 while we're live. We'll hit 1,000 later, but I don't know if we can do it. That's going to be up to you guys. Dark Effect with the 50. $5 super chat. The storytelling between Punk and Drew has been amazing. Totally looking forward to seeing where it goes and how the match ends up. Do we get a stipulation? Yes. It's called Hell in a Cell in October. Patience. Patience, young grasshopper. We don't need a stipulation for the first match. Second match, I could see some sort of no DQ type of stip. I don't know if they would want to do a last man standing maybe before they do Hell in a Cell. I don't even know if you need to. But I think it all builds to the cell. Alex with the $22. Can you see Chad Gable having a brief run in NXT, possibly feuding with Trick Williams for the NXT Championship, and then return to the main roster to run it back for the IC title? How do you feel about that? I don't like it. Not a fan of that. Gable does not need to go to NXT. I don't want to see him in NXT. I want him on the main roster, and I want him working towards the Intercontinental title, ideally. But even if he's not going to be doing that, I don't want to see him sent back down to NXT. Dark Effect, best spears in wrestling history. Where does bronze rank for you? Honestly, I put Bron Breakker's right up there as the best spear since Goldberg and Rhino. You know, Goldberg and Rhino had the most impactful looking spears that really looked like they were breaking you in half. I have not seen a great spear like that, you know, in the ring since Bron Breakker, or since Bron Breakker since those days. He's like a throwback to those guys. And the speed he gets on it, it's great. It's great. I have him top three. Top three, right along those guys. Nick Grasso with the 1999. I love the Wyatt 6 debut tonight. It was excellent, and I assume Alexa Bliss will join when she comes back. As far as the EO stuff goes, I think she pulls a solo Sokoa and gets rid of Dakota and Kyrie and brings in new members. Well, perhaps eventually, maybe Julia, right? I mean, supposedly the deal for her is not even a full-time deal, so it's NXT only. Wouldn't that be something? If we got EO and Julia at some point down the road in a faction, or even better, if we can get them in the ring opposite each other, that'd be even better. Hoffenheim, Sammy against Braun at Money in the Bank, and Chad cashes in mid-match and wins the title. Boots, Liv Morgan is me-tooing Dirty Dom. She is a Jezebel. Oh, Jim Ross would be all over her if he was calling these segments. We'd be getting the Jezebel references every week. Chris Mikesell, they brought back old designs of CM Punk shirts. Do you think Punk will try again and get the WWE ice cream bars back? And is there any discontinued food and drinks that you miss? Discontinued food and drinks? If they're discontinued, they're probably discontinued for a reason. No, I don't miss them. They almost got rid of Twinkies, I think. Didn't they almost get rid of Twinkies a few years ago, but then they didn't? I haven't had Twinkies in years, but I used to love those things. And no, I don't see the ice cream bar. Look, they have ice cream bars. They actually do have ice cream bars. I know this because I've seen them occasionally in the freezer aisle in my supermarket. They have Roman Reigns and Becky Lynch and Macho Man, and I forgot who the fourth person was, are on the bar, but they're the sandwich bars. So they're square. They're not like the old ones that were more almost rectangular, like on a stick. Those they don't do anymore. And I feel like if they were going to bring them back, they would have brought them back, you know, whatever it was, 10 or 12 years ago. And there was probably some reason why they didn't bring them back. And so those I think are gone forever. But yeah, I mean, depending on where you live, if you look, you'll probably find those ice cream sandwiches. Luke Soap. Shout out to Luke and Harrison and the entire Soap clan. Big supporters of the show. Love the Wyatt 6 presentation. Keep up the good work, Solo. Luke, thank you very much. Send my regards to the entire family, please. Hoffenheim says, which episode of The Sound Off was when Solo compared the different versions of Sexy Boy? I have no idea. I know what you're talking about, but I've done 866 of these things, so off the top of my head, I couldn't tell you. Can't help you there. David Thering with the 1992. With a tear in my eye. And to no surprise to you, most likely, I'd buy that album if you started one. As would, I'm sure, a lot of this chat. Have a good night. Thank you, David. Would you buy an album of wrestling songs that I've sung? Probably not. You don't have to lie. You don't have to lie to make me feel better. You won't hurt my feelings. Samoan fan Ray and Finn in a 69 position. What the fuck is wrong with you? Wrong with me? What's wrong with you? You're the one who brought that up. What are you talking about? I said 619. You're the one thinking about 69. Bobby Means with the $5 super chat. SummerSlam is shaping up to be a strong card. Triple H is cooking right now. Tiffy Time wins Money in the Bank and the title only to be confronted by the Queen. So you're saying she wins the title at Money in the Bank. Is that what you're suggesting? Because I don't see that at all. I think we're getting Bayley and Nia. That's what we're going to get. If by chance Bayley beats Nia at SummerSlam, I could see Tiffany cashing in after that. Base Beerus, if Russo booked the six, the Academy would be members. Oh, the Alpha Academy. Yeah. Nier says, Jeff Hardy goes back to TNA. When is Victory Road? I don't know, but didn't work out too well the last time. Christopher Garza, the Uncle Howdy debut was the darkest Raw segment in Corpus Christi since the night after the Chris Benoit murder-suicide. The night after. I thought the Vince McMahon limo explosion happened in Corpus Christi, but that was before. And then a few weeks later, or maybe the week, it was the week after, right? They abandoned the whole angle because of the Benoit stuff. But you know, I know what it was. So they were in Corpus Christi for that episode that turned into the tribute show. That's what it was. Okay. For some reason, I thought the limo explosion was in Corpus Christi, but I think it was the actual episode that got canceled that had Vince in the middle of the ring. Yeah, that one is not going to be topped. That was a dark day. Justin coming in with a gifted membership. Yes, you know, I didn't mention that, but you guys can gift memberships. My channel members got the exclusive NXT Battleground review that I did the previous weekend. You never know when those perks may pop up like that. So if you want to buy a membership or if you want to gift them to other people, I'm seeing the membership numbers are starting to climb again. So it's getting me excited. You can go ahead and do that. Corey Everett, no flex zone. They know better. They know better. I hate that fucking song. Oh, I hate that fucking song. I wish the Wyatt Six would have killed that song tonight. I will never, ever eat at a Wingstop. I have no Wingstop around here anyway. But if I am ever someplace and there is a Wingstop, I will pay. I will take all of the Super Chat money and I will pay Wingstop to take that song off the air. I just can't. I can't deal with it. Thomas Rondon. Sorry I haven't been around for a long time. I have had three strokes, but doing well. Keep up. All hail Solomon. Wow, Thomas, I'm sorry to hear that. One is bad enough, let alone three. But I hope you are doing well, brother. Seriously. Please check in and keep me posted every now and then. I hope you're doing okay. Hoffenheim, when will the Knicks or Nets win a title again? I think the Knicks will win in these next couple of years, actually. I do. There's a lot of people who think they're going to be competitive enough to win next year. But I think they could win a title in the next couple of years. Nightmare Knee, Bray Wyatt is at the center of me disliking Cena and Goldberg. I can understand why. Jarrett Rodriguez with the 1999. Jarrett, thank you, sir. I think Io Sky would benefit from a face turn, but I don't know how we would get there. Having Dakota and Kyrie turn on her doesn't really make sense, and I can't think of anything else. What would you do? She'd be a face to me if she just, if they keep losing and she just starts to just beat the shit out of them one day, she'd be a face to me. That's all she'd have to do. She'd be the biggest badass in that women's division. It doesn't even have to be a baby face. She'd be like a tweener where she just doesn't take crap from anybody. You know, the slightest thing sets her off. You know, the heels try to bully her and pick a fight with her, and she just beats the crap out of them and, you know, stiffs them. And that would get her over, I think, pretty quickly if you did that. The Mount Vernon Kid, Christopher Bennett. So, rewatch the massacre scene, and I noticed that they also got Gunther and Solo. You know, you said Gunther and Solo Sikoa? I thought I saw Gunther, but I couldn't make it out. So I was like, no, that couldn't have been him. You know, I just thought maybe it was like a security guard or, you know, just some no-name person. I'm going to go back when we're done here. I'm definitely going to rewatch that entire segment again. But that's interesting. Because I thought it looked somewhat like him, but I said it can't be him, you know? Lay out Gunther. I mean, come on. I have to go back and look. Aaron with the $50 from earlier says, might be a shot in the dark, but with the Drew angle tonight and the WWE TNA partnership, could you see Drew work a match in TNA as part of his angle before SummerSlam? That's interesting. I know he's a fan of Joe Hendry. I mean, who isn't? You know what? With the partnership they have there and him being a former Impact World Champion, it kind of would make sense. It would almost be like what Punk claimed he was going to do when he beat John Cena for the title and Money in the Bank in 2011. He's like, maybe I'll go to Ring of Honor. Maybe I'll go to New Japan Pro Wrestling. And then he never did. Well, here's their chance. You can send Drew to TNA. How many people will actually see it? Probably not many, unfortunately. But it would get people talking. For one match or one appearance? Why not? Why not? I'd be down for that. Raph says SmackDown and NXT will also be on Netflix outside the US. VPN for the win. It's a good point. Super Pony says Joe Hendry isn't very good in the ring, unfortunately. Well, that's why you put him in there with Drew. Someone for Drew to beat. Yeah, going to put your best guy in there with Drew and have them do the job. Did they not learn their lesson from Battleground when they had their women's champion lose to Roxanne Perez? You don't want to beat all your top people. Barry MK. Vengeance 2007 was much darker than the Raw after it. Having the fans chant, "We want Benoit," having no idea what he did. Yeah, now that's eerie. The Juliet says, could send AJ to TNA as well. Oh, I'm expecting him to have a match there. You know, you got Slammiversary coming up. I think there'll be a WWE name on that show. Jarrett Rodriguez, would you rather take a single shoot punch from Vader or sit through a 20-minute Omos versus Kali match? I'll take my chances with the Omos and Kali match. Shoot punch from Vader? What are you, out of your mind? Have you lost your mind? Do you have a death wish? Because I don't. Well, we have reached the end of your messages. Wow. You guys went nuts tonight. And I thank you. I thank you very much for that. Now, on the likes front, let's see where we're at here. As far as the likes, I don't have an updated counter in front of me, so I'll let you guys update me. Hey, BlizzFan, you know, I gotta give a shout out to BlizzFan here. Now, BlizzFan has been a channel member for 16 months. It says, Uncle Howdy has Bray written on the fiend-like glove on his right hand. Alexa has to be getting a lily mask when she returns as the sixth. Yes, because we had five on the show tonight, which means we're missing one, and it probably will end up being Alexa Bliss, most likely, would be my guess. But this was BlizzFan's big night. You have no idea how long BlizzFan has been waiting for this moment. So I'm actually as happy for BlizzFan as anybody, because I know how long he's been waiting for this. So BlizzFan, I'm happy for you. I'm very happy for you. But yes, we are currently sitting at 830 likes, which is more than double what the usual goal is. So yeah, you guys killed it. And I thank you very much for that. And so I know it's getting late here. So without any further ado, I don't want to wait too long. Let's go ahead and do the deed. Let's go ahead and be the booker.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is now time to be the booker.
The booker. Be the booker. Yeah, I should just mention, I don't even remember if I mentioned it or not, now that I think about it, but next week on Raw, two matches already announced, Money in the Bank qualifiers, Chad Gable, if he lived, Braun Strowman and Bronson Reed on the men's side, on the women's side, it's Lyra Valkyria, Shayna Baszler, and Kairi Sane. So, clearly Bird Girl is going to be going to Money in the Bank, so we know that. Well, let's start off here with Tag Team Be the Booker. This is like a monstrous edition of Be the Booker. I'm all amped up from all your super chats here. So I want this to be a good one. I want this to be a great one. That's not what I wanted to see. But we begin with The Miz. We got The Miz and Damian Sandow. His stunt double. That's what's kicking us off here and Be the Booker. Yeah, we got 1,500 plus still with us here at 2 o'clock in the morning, 2:15 in the morning on a Monday night. That's the kind of night that it is. That's the kind of night that it is. All right, we got Miz and Sandow taking on the Judgment Day, Damian Priest and Finn Balor. I'm giving that the bell. Okay, I'm giving that the bell. First of all, we got our World Heavyweight Champion in here, number one. Number two, I'm giving this the bell for Damian Sandow. Damian Sandow, he killed that gimmick, and I mean that in a good way. He killed it. He was the most entertaining part of that whole thing. He's the glue that held it together. He's the one that made that work. And I maintain he should have won that WrestleMania Battle Royal that year instead of Big Show. They didn't do it. But I'll give that the bell. All because of him. Now we go to Women's Be the Booker. Updated. As of earlier this morning. You'll be happy to know. So let's see where we are going to kick things off here. We're going to kick things off with Dakota Kai. We were just talking about her. Right? Damage control. She's been a loser lately. Hopefully that'll change soon. Dakota Kai. Kicking us off here and Be the Booker. And she is going to be going one-on-one with...
I have one pair of skinny jeans and I'm going to wear them every week just to piss you off.
Big Dave is putting on his skinny jeans. That means it's a good night. Base Beerus just dropped a $35 super chat, and we are going to land on who? Jade Cargill. Dakota Kai and Jade Cargill. What are we thinking about this? I got my finger on the button. I'm debating. I'm tempted to give this the buzzer. But Dakota Kai is a good wrestler, and I think Dakota Kai could probably lead Jade Cargill to one of her better matches. I do believe that. I'm giving that the belt. It's marginal, but I'm giving that the belt. I'm not enthusiastic about it, but I think Dakota could probably work pretty well with her and bump well for her too. All right, main event time. Here we go. Man, I was hoping for a better Be the Booker here. I mean, we gotta end on a strong note here. And then I'll get to your final super chats. If you got any final messages, get them on in so I can get them before I get out of here. Here we go. Begin with, well, how about that? Is that not fucking eerie? Holy shit. Is that, I got goosebumps right now. That is eerie. Considering the number of people that are in this, and we land on Bray Wyatt tonight of all nights, blowing out the lantern, that is freaking me out. We begin with Bray Wyatt. Wow. I don't know what else to say about that. Wow. Whew. He's here. That's right. Bray Wyatt going to go one-on-one with Brock Lesnar. Well, it was an automatic bell anyway. Once I landed on Bray, tonight of all nights, I mean, how could it be anything else? Clean sweep. We got ourselves a clean sweep here. I'm glad we got a clean. So I was hoping to give you guys a clean sweep and Be the Booker, and that is exactly what we got. See? That's how you end it. That's freaky, though. You got to admit, that's pretty freaky. We got Howdy on the screen here. We're talking about the Wyatt Six. We land on Bray Wyatt. Unbelievable. All right, let's get to your final messages here. Cameron Spencer. As a huge Spike Dudley fan, I feel he could have been a great world champion as an underdog babyface. Vince wasted him. No. In ECW, maybe. In WWF at the time, with all the talent they had, absolutely not. Spike Dudley is world champion, maybe intercontinental champion. As world champion, no. I don't see that at all. Base Beerus, thank you for the 35. Gable also looked like he was straight out of Goodfellas. Layla scene. When Jimmy whacks everybody. Also, I love beer and wings, but DDP Yoga has got to be the best product pushed by a wrestler. Gable could use some yoga. I actually just started back up on that. I fall off every few years, and then I go back to it eventually. So I'm starting from the very beginning again. But it's good. It's good. I enjoy it. You know, kicks my ass, but I'm getting back on the wagon with that. Ufman Entertainment. Now, yesterday, it was 30 years since OJ's famous or infamous white Bronco chase. Do you remember? I came home from school and I watched all of it. I think it was happening during the Knicks and the Rockets finals, I think. I think it was the same night because I think they had the game in a box on the screen, and it was either the game was in the smaller box and the Bronco chase was in the bigger picture or vice versa. But yeah, no, I remember that. It was a big deal. It had wall-to-wall coverage when that was going on. I had fun with this Raw. Now, there was a lot going on. There was a lot to dissect and get into here. Obviously, the big closing angle will be what everybody is talking about and speculating on, you know, where they go from here. But just the fact that there's a lot of different things going on this show is what keeps it interesting. More interesting than it used to be, for sure. I'm very frustrated by the Gable stuff. I'm hoping that there is a plan here to get him to where he needs to be. It could involve the Money in the Bank briefcase. We'll see. if he qualifies next week. But the Drew angle, you know, how that plays into SmackDown this week will be important. I'll be here with you on Wednesday night, live after Dynamite, and then we could talk about the Punk stuff and everything else that happens on SmackDown on Friday night. Be sure to check me out tomorrow night. I'm going to be live at 8:30 Eastern over on JD's channel for Tuesday Night Titans. We got a lot to talk about now, so we're going to be talking about all of this and a lot more. Hit that like button on the way out. Leave a comment when we're done here in the comments section. Let me know what you thought of the show and the stream. And check out episode 866 of The Sound Off. We cracked the top 10 podcasts on all of Apple for wrestling podcasts, and that does not happen without your support. So thank you very much. I will see you guys back here live on Wednesday night. So until then, take care, guys.